the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another flagship Monday episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, where we are taking user funds and issuing loans to our friends. My name is Joey. Here is always my co-host and business partner, Len. Buddy, how are you over there today? Pretty big swing in the weather conditions in Southern Ontario. Huge storm Saturday night, lasted all of like 3 hours. And then now this morning, no snow at all. What's going on in your neck of the woods?
What kind of snow did you get over there? Because over here was slightly more than a dusting, and it's now all gone as of midday today. So was it worse over there?
It was a whiteout here Saturday night.
See, that's the difference. The 30-kilometer difference, or 20 miles, depending on where you live in the world. And it could be just a massive difference in terms of the weather we get, because you get the lake effect, and we are just north of the lake. We don't really tend to get it. But everything is good. I continually use up our company funds to buy up property in the Bahamas. One day I'll even let you come and take a look at it. And it's really nice stuff. I got a nice swimming pool, tennis courts. It backs onto a golf course. It's everything I always wanted and more. And just want to thank the business for funding it. I borrowed a lot of money. I don't intend to repay it back. That's just the way things go these days. And if there's ever going to be a congressional committee and what's going on, I'll just be running away. You could find me in a grocery store or whatever, shopping for bananas or whatever the fuck else that guy buys.
Let me know when the orgies start. That's how I know you'll really have flown off the deep end. So we got a lot to talk about tonight, don't we? We got quite a show here. We'll lead, as always, with the price of corn, our favorite asset, which is like not a great number, $15,735 at the moment, U.S. What do you got in the northern dollar?
$21,192. Just before this whole FTX collapse, that was the number, give or take, we were in U.S. dollars. How far we have come in just a few short weeks. Why? Well, we'll be talking about that momentarily. I have one thing on my list of things I want to just chop off here. Is there anything else you wanted to do before I just rhyme off this rather lengthy thing I want to just talk about?
I'll just mention a big thanks to Mike Campbell over at Money Talks for inviting me on to talk about FTX. We're going to talk about that again tonight. I had a lot of fun with Mike. He's got a very professional operation over there at Money Talks, including a producer, a bit of a green room there, and always comes prepared with good questions. We had a great discussion. So if you haven't listened to that, you know, obviously you should, but you should subscribe to that show, because that's a really good show. We sometimes use stats that Mike talks about. And Mike, he's a guy who gets a lot of good guests. And if you're interested in economics, interested in Canadian viewpoints on the current sort of state of macro affairs in the globe, this is a good place to start. So thanks again to him for inviting me on. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that show.
And unfortunately, I didn't listen to it because I didn't want to step on your toes and rip off whatever you say on that show, is we'll be talking about FTX momentarily. So everything I'm going to be listening to the show will be after this show. Mike's show I'll be listening to after what we talk about today. So I didn't want, basically, it's all going to be off the cuff over here. I just want to wrap up one thing before we go on, Joey. With respect to Fountain, listen to us on Fountain if you already haven't done so. It's a great place to get sats while you listen to us, but you could also stream sats to us if you choose to do so. And we also got some boosts this past week, and I just want to read off a few of them because a couple of them are pretty darn good. So Sleipnir wrote to us, I watched this episode live. He was talking about our episode last week, but I didn't get to finish it. The last block of the show, it really hit home. Made me sad that our country is falling apart. I love you guys. Thank you for what you do. Zordon says, message from the near future. You were more right than wrong about FTX and all the shit going tits up. Moby Dix, send us another 100 sats back to work. Thank you very much. Norman Remnant, check this one out, Joey. Normally, I boost 420 sats. Love the number. Until Joey puts his laser eyes back on Twitter, I will donate the minimum amount of sats. 420 minus 320, no laser eyes equal 100 sats. And he quotes, I'm walking the talk. Yes, you are, Norman. And we also have it from Bitcoin Plus Food. You guys should be given the job of, quote, monkey on the back of the Canadian government, end quote. Very insightful and very fair. Fortunate prevented my father from immigrating to Canada, else I'd be living in your shoes. Don't think they fit me too well. And there you go.
So that's quite a comment. Fortunately prevented my father from immigrating to Canada.
Yes.
Otherwise he'd be, that is damning. That is a damning comment. Thank you to everyone who gave us boost, man. It continues to be flattering that people listen at all. First of all, Len shared something with me before the show. I don't know if he intended to share it, but I'm going to share it now. We are in the top 50 business podcasts in Canada, which is almost unbelievable. That, you know, 2 years ago we started at my kitchen table, you know, ripping for 3 hours at a time, talking about all kinds of like anything even adjacent to Bitcoin in the most tangential way. And now we got this kind of focused 1.5, 1 hour-ish show on Mondays and another interview Wednesdays. And it's become a bit of a hit with a few people. And I really appreciate everyone who tunes in, shares it with their friends and the boosts and the plays and downloads. You can spend your time anywhere, man. And for people to spend it listening to us gab back and forth is like, it's heartwarming. I can't say much else. It's just been really great.
Yeah. I'd like to say for me, it's been therapeutic, just ranting away. No better place to do it than here online when you guys are watching it. So thank you so much for tuning in. It's another good week, and this is going to be a doozy of an episode. So let's dive right in, Joey, because first off the bat, let's talk once again about FTX. This sucker is just always on the top of our agenda. But before we embark on this week's FTX journey, remember that SBF, he was touting that FTX was carbon neutral and Bitcoin, quote, uses a lot of energy, end quote. FTX is indeed carbon neutral, as it now uses nil energy at the particular moment. So good for you. You achieved the goal of zero carbon usage. There you go. But the shadiness at the FTX exchange, it is absolutely unreal. In fact, did you know that BlockFi, they took out a $250 million loan from FTX? And it doesn't seem too bad on the surface, but unless you start digging into it, well, that $250 million loan, they didn't get it in cash. They got it in FTT tokens. What a scam. So if you're wondering why BlockFi collapsed, well, it's probably due to dumb decisions like that. And what about this one, Joey? I'm not sure if you heard about this. The Bahamas government ordered SBF to hack the FTX system and transfer assets to the Bahamas government. This is according to court filing. I thought FTX was just there to fund money to Zelensky and friends. I mean, did the government of the Bahamas get in bed with the Ukraine government? I don't know what's going on here, but this shit, it's an onion. Every time you peel another layer on it, it just is so much more to reveal. I did some research here, the FTT tokens, and I've learned a little bit more than I really want to learn about it, but here we go. To take advantage of staking, you got to KYC yourself, and there's two levels of KYC. And with staking comes reduced trading fees. So you can't take advantage of reduced trading fees on FTX when it was operational without staking your FTT tokens. The higher the staking, the less the fees. So it's incentive. They give you incentive to stake more and more. Also, by staking your tokens, you increase the amount of votes you could be allocated in FTX polls. I wonder if they've been taking a page out of the US government in terms of stacking a deck when it comes to voting. They also, with respect to staking FTT tokens, you could increase the amount of SRM or Serum tokens that are airdropped to you. And staked FTT, as mentioned by you, Joey, cannot be unstaked for 2 weeks unless you take a penalty. And also, they cannot be used as collateral. Here's something very new I've learned, and that not many people have been talking about this. So I'm wondering if this is a CBP exclusive. Mega Serum. Have you heard about this, Joey?
Isn't Alex Jones selling this as like a male vitality concoction? Is it something else? Okay.
This is nothing.
Sounds very similar.
Nothing you inject, nothing you take in by. It's basically Mega Serum. And I'll quote here from, this is right from FTX's tweet. So I'm not like making things up here. Mega Serum is like serum, but more special. It's a way to bake NFTs into serum, except that it has impact on the ecosystem because of the bonuses. It's also a solution to a dilemma. Most people like cheap coins. You could buy a lot of them, but some people like expensive ones. You could turn 1 million serum into 1 mega serum, and you crack 1 mega serum in reverse and get 1 million serum. But mega serum is scarce according to SBF. There cannot exist more than 1,000. So in practice, 1 mega serum is worth more than 1 million serum because it's always going to be a cap supply. So Mega Serum will likely trade at a premium. This was from 2 years ago. It has never been released.
I've been releasing Mega Serum since I was like 18.
Have you heard of Mega Serum before? Like,
it's such an easy joke. How did you not make that joke? Anyway, it's
no,
fine.
But this fucking thing.
I've never heard of it. No, only Serum. The SRM token I've heard of, but I haven't heard of its Mega colleague. No, so, I haven't.
Serum. I went a little bit further into this as well. I looked at the token supply. This is straight from the Serum website, and it's broken down as such. 22% is allocated to project contributors, 27% for partners and collaborator fund, 20% for team and advisor, 4% lock seed and auction purchaser, 27% ecosystem incentive fund. This thing is totally pre-mined, given out to the people that they like themselves, and ultimately then given out to the general public at a premium price so they could capitalize on your stupidity. But one thing that happened with FTX, it just collapsed. Understand this. It's not a big deal given what's transpired and what we learn about it. Binance, too, is another one we should be looking at with a keen eye. Not to say that Binance is on the verge of collapse. I'm just saying take a very keen eye to Binance, because what they do, there is similarities between what their operation is and what FTX was. So is Binance safe? Probably. Will it collapse? Maybe, and I'm not going to be surprised. In fact, let's take a look a little bit more into Binance. In fact, in Binance, you could get a crypto loan without collateral, Joey. Did you know that?
I love collateral-free loans. That's exactly what we need.
So unlike bank loans, you don't need a good credit score to get a crypto loan. So they're giving out fucking loans to people that don't have good credit. They don't give a shit. Crypto loans provide typically required users to pledge their crypto assets as a loan. Whatever they fucking have, they're going to be using as collateral. And if the thing goes down, which it has in the past little while, well, whatever they could liquidate is now worth a heck of a lot less. So this whole system here, what Binance has created, is a system for them to collect shitcoins that has been devalued significantly over time. They're saying instead of using, so you could apply for crypto loans, and these are called the Binance loans, and it offers loans at reasonable rates. Even the BNB tokens. I rhymed off what FTT tokens do. BNB is very similar. You could earn 40% commission by having the BNB tokens on the referral program. You could get exclusive sales tokens from the Binance Launchpad. The Binance Launchpad are new tokens that are listed on Binance. And by having the BNB token, you get access to this at pre-mine and potentially get some savings from this. It's absolutely garbage. It also gives you the access to Binance loan. You could stake BNB and you could earn rewards. Very similar to FTT. You could spend your BNB at 60 million merchants worldwide. I don't know who the fuck is taking it, but 60 million is an absolute crazy number. So if you think the BNB token is safe, remember just last month, October of 2022, there was a hack to the tune of tens, if not hundreds of million dollars that were taken out of the BNB chain. As a result, they halted the chain because they wanted to get to the bottom of this. And that goes to show you how centralized it is over there. It truly is a shitcoin. It's not safe. Binance, I don't know how they're funding their operation, but I suspect they're going to be bleeding money. They have been for the past little while. But back to FTX, the new CEO of FTX, who, by the way, was also working on the Enron bankruptcy. So he's got a little bit of clout here. Mm-hmm. He's amazed by what he has seen through the FTX. Quote, never in my career have I seen such a complete failure of corporate records, end quote. A lot of red flags here, so I'm going to name a few of them. Reimbursements, approved or denied over chats by emojis. Joey, next time I ask for money, just please give me the thumbs up by emoji, and I'm going to just take the money out of the account. Alameda Research gave SBF a $1 billion personal loan. They also loaned out their director of engineering, Nishad Singh, $543 million. $1.5 billion given out to two individuals for loans. What the hell are you going to do with that kind of money? And do you expect them to pay it back? Obviously not now. They had zero board meetings for a company that was supposedly worth $32 billion. And never mind, they were repurposing the customer assets, and they were using that to pay for orgies and for property in the Bahamas, which is absolutely incredible. And it was also revealed that Alameda was purchasing, get this, crypto tokens before they were listed on the FTX exchange. That is fucking shady shit. I actually got some examples here. So Magic was listed on FTX on October 1st. Before listing, it was priced at 34 cents. After listing, 43 cents. GMX, listed October 4th, $36 before listing, $40 after listing. Euler was listed on September 20th, as low as $6.20, and it pumped to $10.20. So for sure they were buying these tokens below market value, then just spending it and just pumping into the market and wait for people to just snap it up. And these guys were making money. It's a shady way to do business, but it's going to leave a black eye in exchanges. And you know what? Regulators are probably salivating right now how to fucking deal with these problems moving forward. But the first thing they should be examining is the regulators, in fact, in the U.S. particularly. Well, Alameda Research, they were approved for a Paycheck Protection Program loan. Did you know about this, Joey?
I think the only people who weren't approved for PPP loans are on this stream right now. I think I'm pretty sure every other person on the planet got a check from the U.S. government during COVID, except us.
$370,000 given out by the PPP program in April 2020. And this loan is listed as, quote, paid in full, as per Bloomberg. Because remember that they just forgave these loans not too long ago. Incredible. Joe Biden came out today and said that he's calling for global and crypto rules after the FTX collapse. So here you go. There's going to be a lot of things coming out. In fact, the U.S. House Committee announced they're going to have a hearing on the FTX collapse. In fact, this is being led by one Maxine Waters, who was recorded as blowing a kiss to SBF when he was talking to at a congressional hearing not so long ago. And interestingly enough, Ms. Waters was in the Bahamas just this April of 2022. Why? To discuss crypto. With who? Unknown, but I'll let you connect the dots. But those in power, they're going to hammer down on companies generating private capital, aka shitcoins. And it's going to try to make them understand that the only thing that they could do right now is just bow down to the Federal Reserve, because only the Federal Reserve can perform this sorcery of creating money out of thin air. And but back to FTX, looking at what's going on in the past little while, this man, he might need assistance. He's been tweeting out sometimes one letter at a time per tweet. It's insane he's doing this. The guy, he must have snapped or something. I don't know. In fact, the John Ray, the chief restructuring officer right now and the CEO of FTX, he's saying the SBF has no ongoing role at the FTX exchange, and he's not speaking on behalf of the exchange. SBF believes he's still part of it, so he's delusional. And another one that might be delusional, the New York Times. Not sure if you saw this one, Joey, but just this month, November 30th, there's going to be a gala going on. There's four premier speakers coming up. The four speakers coming to this event: Zelensky, Zuckerberg, Yellen, and SBF. Are you going to this one? I would love to see this one.
I couldn't get tickets, Len. I tried.
Oh, shit. We'll have to talk to the right people. So
maybe you know what we got to do. We got to tell them we just cracked top 50.
Is that enough for us to get a snap to get some 30 tickets or something?
If we get into the top 25, they might put our picture up there in black and white and give us a few words too.
They don't want to hear from us. And we also have some more mainstream media madness. And from Forbes, there's a title of an article. It's called Alameda Research CEO Carolyn Ellison is a math whiz who loves Harry Potter and taking big risks. She is also one of the supporting players in SBF's FTX catastrophe and a new darling of the alt-right. So how many people here would characterize somebody that has lost $9 billion as a math whiz? Not me, but unfortunately somebody from Forbes does. Well, back to SBF. Well, he took out some loans and so I see here a $300 million loan, a $420 million. They're trying to raise money for FTX to keep it afloat. And even by his own admission, the FTX was a really big exchange because at one time they were dealing with $10 billion a day of volume and billions of dollars of transfers. That this is a humongous exchange. But the problem they were dealing with too much leverage, and it caused a bank run that when the market crashed and it exhausted their liquidity. And what are they trying to do? They're trying to raise capital to try to get things going again. So his way to fix it is throw money at the problem. He needs $6 to $10 billion. I'm not sure if he's going to raise it, but good luck. And in fact, if he wants to try getting the money, maybe he should try talking to the people who hacked FTX not too long ago. $600 million was taken out of their system and stolen last week and siphoned out of crypto wallets. And they swapped all that into ETH. And from what I understand, they moved that ETH into Bitcoin ultimately. So these people might be Bitcoiners all in all. But I'm just, for this, it's quite a series. And I'm waiting for the miniseries to be released. And hopefully it isn't going to be on Disney Plus because I canceled my subscription thanks to the sage advice by our finance minister. We also have some bad news that's spreading. Genesis. And it looks like this is a company that trades digital assets like Bitcoin. And it's not the Sega Genesis console. So this is a company that's basically in its last legs because they're having liquidity issues. And the downfall of FTX is causing them what they call abnormal withdrawal requests. And it's exceeding their liquidity, as I mentioned. So there's a bank run over there. They can't pay their clients with the deposited funds. Real problem over there. This news came just 6 days after Genesis tweeted out that saying, yeah, you know, things are going well. They're trying to appease customers. How do things go from 6 days from everything is being well to, oh shit, we don't have any money to give away? It's incredible. And this is no small company, $2.8 billion crypto lending company. This is massive. And they say that the lending business is impacted, but doesn't affect Genesis trading or custody businesses. Importantly, this decision has no impact on the business operations of Genesis Digital Currency Group, DCG. And we'll be going back to this in just a few moments. But with respect to the liquidity issues, this reminds me of something that happened about 100 years ago when we had the Great Recession, Depression. And there was a bank run of it. This is one of the reasons why there was a Great Depression. So it seems like things are cyclical. And 100 years later, here we are. And people are doing bank runs and there's not enough money to go around. And it keeps spreading. We also had Genesis Earn. Their customers are unable to redeem funds as Genesis Lending halts their withdrawals. What's the connection? Well, Gemini partnered with Genesis to a 7.4 yield on their customer deposits, 7.4% yield. And keep in mind, who wants to now take 7% yield when you can now take 4% or higher yield on U.S. Treasuries, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, 2 years, 5 years? They're all over 4%. It's much safer to go into that than to get into some risky shitcoin. So you might as well take the ultimate shitcoin, which is the U.S. dollar. So Gemini is reporting losses in crypto and NFTs. They are now estimated at over $3 trillion. It's a lot of money that's been wiped off the market. And if you want to do a comparison of the numbers, the stock market lost $8 trillion in value in 2007 to 2009 in the financial crisis. So it is comparable between the two collapses here. And FTX is responsible for a lot of this. But I just want to go last thing back to DCG. Genesis is the holding company of DCG, as I mentioned. They happen to be the issuer of GBTC, and it's expected that they're running into a liquidity crunch. They're reporting that they're trying to raise some money because that their assets are below their liabilities. If something happens here, we talked about it briefly last week. GBTC potentially could get liquidated. If this happens, look the fuck out. This price is going to go much, much further down. But there's a silver lining with all this, Joey. You know what it is? Apparently, the Bitcoin hardware wallet sales surge in the past little while. That's good news. And you know what? This is going to open a door for regulated exchanges, potentially like Coinbase's and others, to maybe make gains because people might look at those exchanges as a safe haven to park your money and buy assets. I don't particularly buy that, but some people might look at that. But you know what? I'll leave it up to you. You could take it from here. I do have a few more things I probably want to talk about later on, but there's enough rambling for me right now.
There's a lot there. I'll add a little bit of color to some of the stuff you said. So the BNB token, this would be a little bit of a rehash what I said on Money Talks, but I'll do it anyways for people who don't listen to both. The BNB token is the Binance equivalent to FTT. It may not be quite the flywheel that FTT was. I believe BNB was spun up quite some time after the exchange really found its footing. So it wasn't used in quite the same way to lure VC money and inflate the balance sheet. And, you know, I doubt very much Binance forced investors in Binance to hold the BNB token on their balance sheet as part of the agreement, the investment agreement. All that said, it's still pretty dirty. Like, I wouldn't be dealing in BNB if I could avoid it. And I don't, because I don't use Binance. I did use Binance though. And so one other thing I'll mention is that Binance does a good job getting altcoins, Bitcoin, Ethereum in small amounts away from its users and into Binance coffers and wallets vis-a-vis something called Dust. And Binance has this service where if you have, you know, any leftover tokens in your wallet that aren't in large enough sums to trade, for example, or won't cover network fees in a transfer, they'll give you equal value in BNB token and take it all. And so you'll have a little bit more of BNB at the expense of all these other tokens. Now, you can say what you want about stuff, you know, like trades on Binance, all of it is garbage, right? But the fact of the matter is most of it probably has more utility than BNB. and probably has more value than BNB. And so what Binance is doing really is sharp. This idea that you can trade the token you print, which basically has to stay on your platform to have utility, for tokens that you can't print. Even if someone else can print them, you can't. And so you can trade the thing you're printing for something that you can't print in perpetuity. That's a really sharp model. And so they did a good job with that. I don't know why more people are not talking about that dust thing. To me, that's like an obvious sort of fishy problem. You mentioned that FTX never had a board meeting. I was listening to All In a couple of weeks ago. This clip made the rounds. Chamath was talking about the suggestions that his fund gave to FTX. I think his fund's called Social Capital. And they made some suggestions to FTX about how to bring in more investment, because they didn't really want to invest, but they basically wrote the guy a two-pager of things he could do to get their support. And among the things that he wrote was form a board. This guy didn't even have a board of directors. Talk about checks and balances. Like the Enron guy is right. There was no measure of financial diligence taken by almost anybody on the FTX team, SBF included. And you know, it's not like they didn't know. Chamath, for all his faults, at least knows what a company should look like from a structure standpoint before he parks money there. Sequoia apparently doesn't. The Ontario Teachers Pension apparently doesn't, but at least Chamath does. And in his words, Chamath says they told him to fuck off. So, you know, if that's the case, then you kind of know what SPF's about. You mentioned the tweeting thing, the tweeting one letter at a time. I think we talked about this in our private chat. Maybe you missed it, but the crypto deleted tweet bot that records deleted tweets only refreshes every minute or 2 minutes, something like that. So if you issue a tweet around the same time you delete a tweet, the bot will miss the deleted tweet and won't cache it. And then that way you don't have to pay the price on social media for your deleted tweets unless someone is screen capping, which obviously many people have been doing with SBS tweets. But that's why he did that. And this idea that he, you know, is kind of losing his mind or whatever, like, I don't buy it. Anyone who saw those exchanges in the DMs with the Vox reporter will tell you that this guy is a fraud and understands the nature of the fraud he's perpetrating. He doesn't really believe in this effective altruism stuff. He doesn't really care if people are losing their money. He felt like he had to do X, Y, and Z. He's very utilitarian in his approach. You may love that or hate that, but the fact of the matter is he's at least aware. You know, all this to say, Len, people shouldn't be playing in these sandboxes. You know, I talked a little bit about this with Mike, about the accredited investor rules and what government should be doing to protect people from this kind of thing, if they truly care about protection. You mentioned, obviously, Biden and company planning on coming down with some, I don't know, broad stroke legislation, if I had to guess, or at least a narrative that suggests they're going to do that or want to do that, that the news networks can carry for them. That legislation shouldn't be about not being able to buy Bitcoin. I would even throw Ethereum in there, among other tokens, right? What that legislation should be is something easily agreed upon by all participants. And that legislation should basically read, if you are running an exchange that has a native token, it's a security and you have to shut down immediately until you get licensing, period. You can't use that token to inflate your balance sheet. You can't sell that token to investors. You can't give that token to VCs. You can't do anything. You're issuing a security and you have to stop your operation immediately until you get licensing. That would be the most obvious first step. And the reason I want that to be the first step is because everyone across the board would agree to something like that. It would be more telling in terms of an individual actor's intentions if they disagreed with that legislation than almost anything else. It would unmask scammers basically immediately. And so I would like to see that as a first step. Are they going to do that? Man, probably not, because it's too easy. And they, you know, they have a population that I think is generally too uninformed in this space. I'm going to pick some very kind words here, but I think differently than, I think uninformed is probably too soft a term. They have a population that's generally uninformed and broadly naive, both about crypto, you know, including Bitcoin and Ethereum. I'll lump them in there for brevity's sake. They're naive about Bitcoin, crypto, whatever, and they're also naive about securities laws, and they're also naive about money management, and they also have a grudge against people who have extra income to invest in these things. So the legislation is not going to be something that easy. It's going to be something, I think, much more severe and friction causing than that, which is unfortunate, but I think that's something we have to prepare for, both from a, you know, Bitcoiners getting political point of view, a lobbying point of view, and also from a price shock point of view. There's a lot of people who are going to be panicking. And I said this before on the show, that the thing to look out for in Bitcoin at this moment is, of course, these contagion events, of which there is a new one every week, it seems like, since the summertime. But the other thing to look out for is Bitcoin has not been in an environment where there's been this much downward pressure. People will panic at 10,000. People will panic at 12,000. People will panic at 15 or 14 or 8 or 5, much the same way as they did before, because we're emotional creatures and that's what we do. To pretend you know the market based on an algorithm, based on the physics of the game. There's a great quote. You know, if you think you can read a market or predict a market the same way you can predict a chemical reaction, just imagine the chemical reaction, but every single bit, every single chemical, every single proton, every single everything has feelings on top of all this other shit going on. It's an impossible game. And so I think when people say, oh, there's a floor here, floor there, watch out for this, watch out for that, it's, you know, well-intentioned, I think, in a lot of cases, but it's just impossible to predict. So there's going to be some shock there. I think the question we got to ask ourselves now as Bitcoiners is, what are we doing to take advantage of this? We could wallow and cry over spilt milk and keep on going, not your keys, not your coins. I like that phrase, okay? I treat my Bitcoin, you know, much like I said a couple of weeks ago, you got to protect it like it's worth a million, not like it's worth 15,000. And I protect my Bitcoin well. I know you protect your Bitcoin well. I'm sure many people listening and watching protect their Bitcoin well. But, you know, the problem we're facing now is not necessarily one of it's difficult, because we have an opportunity here to bring people in to the space. I think new faces, new minds, new ideas, because the price is low and because we have an opportunity to differentiate for new people between Bitcoin and alts and Bitcoin and ETH and Bitcoin and whatever. Question is, how are we going to do it? Are we in a position? I know you and me, you know, think about this when we pick the topics and talk about the stuff on the show. Are we in a position to make the case to new investors that this thing is safe, secure, whatever, right? I think we are. How do we message that? Because the messaging from the other side, and the other side is not just like Ethereum or whatever. The other side is like Ethereum, bankless. It's the media. It's the government. It's people who don't understand the token at parties. It's people who don't have money to invest. It's people who view everything related to, you know, top-down policy as holy scripture. It's all these things, right? And the other side is, you know, a special blend of confident and uninformed. And it's difficult to compete with that. So I it's going to be something I start thinking about a little more in the way I tweet. You know, you mentioned in the boost, I took away the lazy eyes from my profile. I have no intention of putting those back on anytime soon, because if you're going to be a face that brings people into the space, you know, literally and figuratively, as far as laser eyes go, you better be measured in your approach, because people are sick of these evangelists that are overzealous, take no prisoners, and, you know, quote unquote, don't have time to explain it to you, you know. And I know that's like a Satoshi quote, but this is not the time for that. It's just not. And we got to come up with a way to message better to new people. As far as the other stuff you mentioned there, GBTC, Digital Currency Group, you know, what would be the outcome of GBTC going bankrupt, having to liquidate? I don't think they will. Coinbase has this thing out today that says GBTC's assets are secure. We mentioned this on the show last week, I think, that Coinbase is so heavily regulated and has to keep their assets one-to-one. They're not allowed, as part of their regulatory commitment and their open books to a number of lettered agencies in the States, they're not allowed to commit any, you know, SBF type lending infractions. The other thing too is that Coinbase, you know, as far as like its market cap compared to GBTC, it's, you know, it's 10 times the size. Coinbase doesn't have to worry about GBTC. You know, I think that's not really going anywhere. But much like I said earlier, the problem is not necessarily that there's, you know, more contagion, although I think that's possible. The problem is the sentiment, man. Like, what, everywhere you look, everyone thinks prices are going down, not just in Bitcoin and everything. Like I'm looking at my portfolio today. It's red. It's been red more days than not for the last 6 months, right? And this sentiment carries all over the place. So, you know, I'm not particularly worried about Bitcoin. I think as more people realize that, and this is not just no coiners or pre-coiners, it's Bitcoiners who were here and are still in the speculative phase or are still interested in speculation more than the underlying tech. I think a lot of people are going to realize, hey, wait a minute. Like, I really want to have an asset that's outside of these traditional rails, outside of these traditional issues, outside of these traditional shortcomings. And the price of it right now makes it seem like a pretty good deal. And if I just put a little bit of money in here and add this to my, you know, weekly portfolio investing strategy or monthly portfolio investing strategy, I might think about this in a, you know, a really positive light in 10 years. I have a friend who, a very bright guy, one of my best friends, has an MBA from a good school here in Ontario. And he is actually, you know, starting to talk about buying Bitcoin at these depressed prices because he sees the writing on the wall with some other stuff and sees value in this now. That's a guy who, you know, went through all the kind of fiat education that you can possibly get, basically, and, you know, could possibly reasonably attain in a lifetime. And even he's starting to realize. So I think this is going to come slowly, but it's going to come, Len. And I think, you know, as Bitcoiners, you're going to have times like these where you're like, ah, it's another fucking blow up. Ah, it's another disaster. Ah, SBF. Ah, Alex Mashinsky, Celsius, this, that, the other. It's going to keep happening because regulators are doing, they're protecting people onshore. And by doing that, they're forcing companies to go offshore and then letting their citizens invest offshore and then crying and complaining that they weren't protected. Like, it, you know, that's never going to change. It's this, you know, abdication of responsibility by policymakers, unfortunately. So what can change is the way we message as Bitcoiners. And so I'm going to try and change it. I'm going to try and start talking about this stuff a little more measured when I'm with family, friends, when I'm on Twitter, when I'm at work, when I'm doing all this stuff, right? There's better ways to approach this. And if you can make one or two people become nodes for this thing, the same way you and me are nodes for this thing, it's going to make a big difference. So that's where my focus is now.
It's always been a grassroots movement. It's never been funded by a particular person or a company or a group of people, whatever. I'm looking right now at the amount of money that was spent lobbying or through lobbyist industries in 2021. And it's incredible to see how much money is being spent on, well, number one, pharmaceutical, $357 million. And that dwarfs second place worst electronics at $180 million. And the list goes down. And the lowest I see here is TV movies and music at $58.3 million spent on lobbyists. It's a huge list. That's what we're up against. It's the people that are over in government. And they are listening. They have the ear of the lobbyists because they're the ones that are donating. They're the ones that are providing all the funding and whining and dining and you name it. We don't have the ability to fund lobbyists. And the only ones that we should consider that might be in a position to do so would be Bitcoin mining companies. But right now, they're just trying to keep their head above water. They don't have any money to spend on whining and dining politicians. But really, if you look at it, I want to just go to the GBDC thing. It's not what Coinbase has. Coinbase has the Bitcoin on the reserves, and that's not being disputed. I believe that was just came out today that they confirmed the fact that they had it, but it might be dated from September. But the fact that they hold it or not, that's not the big thing. It's DCG, the company that has more liabilities than assets. And because of that, if they have to start closing up shop and liquidating stuff they have, well, they're not going to continually hold a business that provides them really only 2% annual fees through their through maintenance and whatever. So they'll just liquidate it and it will go into market. This is the worst case scenario. I'm not saying this is going to happen. This is probably a very, very far-fetched, but it is within the realm of possibility. And if it does happen, we'll look out because the price of Bitcoin is going to go down quite a bit. And you're right. I mean, it's a good time to try to get more people on board, but it's also opportunities for a lot of people to get on board, even on institutions, because institutional side of things is, look, Fidelity and BlackRock, they've offered Bitcoin services or Bitcoin selling to their customers for some time. This is not a small thing. They have a lot of customers that they could take advantage of this and buy Bitcoin. But who's going to want to do this in this particular market? Bitcoin's gone down faster than other assets have, and everybody's lost a lot of money. In fact, I'll be talking about that in the next segment. So it's a very, very difficult time to get people to come on board the Bitcoin bandwagon. But the more they keep burning their own currency and debasing it and putting up these stupid monetary and fiscal policies, it's just easier to bring them on board. It's just not going to happen within the next couple of months. Probably it's going to happen longer than that. It's too bad, but we do have a good opportunity to drag more people in.
Yeah. I'm split on the, does this contagion accelerate or decelerate the length of the bear market? I don't know. I'm not sure. There's a lot of different headwinds that we didn't have in 2018 now. Regulatory, fiscal monetary policy, we've talked about a lot, a war. We'll see. Len, what can we do? We're going to continue making content. We're going to continue trying to educate people. And most importantly, I'm going to continue buying Bitcoin every day. Like, what else can you do, right? There's never been a stronger case for an extra system outside the system asset that just works. And that's what this thing is. And the more people realize it just works, the harder it'll be to debate the value of this thing. So strap in, keep doing your thing, everybody listening, watching, and be patient. That's all.
Yeah. Let's move on. Let's talk about Clown World News. And there's a lot going on. Right now we could talk about the PPI, the Producer Price Index. Well, they increased by a seasonally adjusted 0.2% in the month of October. And this is a smaller increase than Wall Street analysts were predicting. And so this is rather good news, right? Well, it went up. So this is not a great thing to look at. PPI should be going down over time, especially all the measures they put in place to try to control rising costs. Well, another thing that they're going to have to deal with is the money that's going to be going out for the Ukraine war. The White House has asked Congress for an additional $37 billion for Ukraine, and they've already spent tens of billion dollars on this particular war. Oh man, you should probably ask FTX what the heck's going on, because that was the usual funneling tool that they use to send money to Ukraine. So without that, they have to find other ways to do so. But anyways, they're financing a foreign war. That's essentially it. And if you look at this is history repeating itself. The Roman Empire had the same problem. And this is one of the reasons, not the reasons, but one of the reasons why it helped collapse their empire, because they were debasing their currency, funding all these foreign wars, rinse and repeat until the system broke. And it did. So, yeah. So, well, there is some scary news that I want to talk about. Carvana, they're laying off 8% of their workforce. It's 1,500 people that are going to be, unfortunately, left by the wayside here. And it's Merry Christmas to those laid off people. Their stock is down 97% over the last year. That's incredible. U.S. household debt climbed at the fastest annual pace since 2008. And that was as of the third quarter of this year. The debt has spiked $351 billion in the quarter from July until September. That's the largest quarterly increase since 2007. And this brings the collective U.S. household debt to $16.5 trillion. When you're raising debt at a point of $300 billion a quarter, it's $1 billion plus annually every year tacked on to that number. The credit card balance collectively rose more than 15% in the same period in 2021. That's the largest annual jump in more than 20 years. Credit card debt, it's incredible, because that's something people use to just buy stuff on the go. They're using it now to fund inflation. That's sad. And they're saying this is a result of a combination of robust spending, consumer demand, and higher prices, according to a Fed official. No shit. And if you look at the debt I'm talking about, it's a combination of credit card, mortgage, and auto loan balances. And all three have been rising significantly. And this is something to note too. New mortgage applications, they've been slowed down significantly too. So taking that into consideration, mortgages are generally the biggest debt that you're going to be taking on. That's slowed down, but still debt is rising at $300 billion quarterly. That's insane. Fidelity has reported that the average 401k balance plunged 23% year over year due to what you love to call it, market volatility. You laugh at that term, but that's what they're saying. Market volatility wiped off 23% of the average 401k balance. And maybe the markets, they're probably reeling, given the fact that the once-in-a-lifetime trader, Nancy Pelosi, has stepped down as leader, as the House Democrat leader. And this is the first time she's not going to be in that position for 20 years. So that's a pretty scary thing. But even more scary things to talk about. Target, not a small company. Their stock and the company itself got absolutely wrecked. The net income for Target has dropped 52%. Okay, it's gone down 52%, but something has gone up 50%. They say theft has gone up 50%, and the company has lost $400 million in stolen inventory. And they're saying this from, quote, organized retail crime, end quote. That's third world BS. And we had a chart just released from the St. Louis Fed president, and he's talking about interest rates, and he's showing a chart where it could run up to as potentially as high as 7%. And he's saying that interest rate hikes only have a, quote, limited effect on inflation. And if they do happen to get to 7%, I'm not entirely sure they will, but if they do, what's going to happen to mortgages, credit card debt, car payments, business loans, you name it? It's all going to be so much more costly. And if they do manage to increase rates that high, it's going to impact your spending habits moving forward. Remember, this is all an environment too that we have the conclusion of the COP27 in Egypt. And this COP27, they struck an agreement over there, Joey. I'm not sure if you heard this one. They say that rich countries are going to pay developing world's climate disasters. So the fact that shit gets water, whatever, well, rich countries are going to be paying for this. Who the hell agreed to this? Why are we going to be paying more just because it's going to be raining more in some faraway place, which may or may not be as a result of what we've done? I don't know. Maybe it was President Xi that was cornering Trudeau and twisted his arm to make him agree to this. I have no idea. But overseas, we can look what's going on in the European Union. This is kind of scary. They're prepping for a potential ban on privacy coins. And the list includes Monero, Zcash, Secret, and Dash. So they're going after these privacy coins. How much longer before they do the same if they do decide this before they go after Bitcoin? It's not going to be too much longer after that. And I'm going to just end it on this one thing, Joey. New Zealand, they are deciding in the next little while for their lawmakers to see if they want to lower voting age from 18 to 16. Who the heck is thinking of that? It's got obviously because it's advantageous for the governing party. You're going to see more stuff like this coming out. It's not just the dead that's going to be coming out and voting en masse. It's going to be also people that are 16 years old. I don't know, man. This is not the world that I want to live in. It's going in the wrong direction. And the more shit they pull like this, it just makes me shake my head. And it's just time to buy more Bitcoin.
I don't know, man. Like, talk about gloomy. The idea that people are going to see all the stats and figures and stories you just talked about and still vote for the same stuff over and over again. You know, if you dropped an alien onto this planet and told them that, they'd say, no way. It just doesn't make any sense. There's no long-term thinking. It's self-defeating. You're putting a target on your back. You know, you can't possibly vote for the same things over and over again. And it's not necessarily just Democratic policies. It's some Republican policies too. You know, I'm quick to point out that Trump was the one who started the COVID money printing and all the other measures they took over there next door. So, you know, but it seems, Len, that they are going to continue to vote for this. You know, we talked about the election a bit last week, so I won't go into too much detail, but the fact that you can look at rising crime, rising inflation, rising, you know, very frequent input costs into an average American life, like gasoline, other energy costs, education, food, and vote for the same color again and again. You know, it just blows me away. I don't really understand how that's possible until I think about how one becomes short-sighted in times of crisis, how one looks inward to their immediate family and to themselves during times of crisis. You don't really have a choice but to vote for policies that are completely missing what's on the horizon if it means you get a little bit of help putting food on your table. I put out a tweet today, Joe Pompliano, I know a last name that we don't want to use on this show, but put out a tweet about the Canadian home prices and rent prices, or one or the other, jumping like 3x the amount that wages have jumped in the last little while, which is a stat we mentioned before. And I just think, like, you know, how can you do anything but vote for the $1,000 check that's coming in under the guise of, you know, quote unquote renter's relief? You know, whatever soother you're sucking on this month is completely insane. And we just keep doing it. Inflation relief, this bill from the Ford government for tutoring for $200 for people with kids or whatever. Like, no one is spending that on a tutor. Everyone knows that no one is spending it on a tutor, and everyone knows that everyone knows no one's spending it on a tutor. And yet we all just sit here patting each other on the back about the tutor fee, stipend. Like, what are we doing? What the fuck are we doing? The number of people who are going to pay the price for this down the road in terms of not having healthy relationships, right? Couldn't start a family, couldn't buy a house, living paycheck to paycheck. That puts strain on relationships. When you have strained relationships, you have more single people. Single people make mistakes. They do things that they probably shouldn't do. I hate to say it, but generally speaking, okay, if you get a bunch of single 20-year-old guys in a room and a bunch of married, you know, let's call them 30, a bunch of single 30-year-old guys and a bunch of married 30-year-old guys, you're going to have a lot more problems with the single 30-year-old guys over a long enough time horizon than you do with the married 30-year-old guys. That's just a fact of the matter. And when you spread that across the entire country, this is indisputable. It's happened overseas before. It's not new, okay? Then you start talking about, well, kids that come out of these strained relationships don't do well either. They don't get sleep at night. They don't get fed as well as they should because their parents can't afford it. And then they can't learn that well. They're difficult in the classroom. They're restless in the classroom. And it burns out teachers. Teachers get burned out, and then the school falls apart. School system kind of, you know, collapses in on itself. Then on top of that, you start talking about the wage piece, okay? Whether or not I agree that teachers and educational workers deserve a 10% raise is irrelevant. I do not, by the way, believe that they should be given a raise based on inflation. In fact, I would argue they deliver some of the worst results consistently across any professional silo. Education is underachieving almost all the time. But that aside, the fact of the matter is these people have to live, okay? The same way you and me have to live, the same way people in the chat, listening, watching have to live. So whether or not they get a raise or not is almost... It's at this point, it's almost got to be free of merit, because the policy perversion at the highest levels has made things so bad for almost everyone that without a raise, you can't eat. You can't keep your house. You can't raise the kid you just had over COVID. Fuck, you could probably not even feed the dog you got over COVID if you tried. Like, what's dog food cost? I think I pay like $120 a bag for dog food for my dog. He's not like an overly big animal, nor does he eat gourmet food, but that's what it costs to feed a dog, right? And so, like, you got all these expenses. It's almost, you almost have to remove the meritorious piece of salary scales, because if you don't, people can't live. And I don't have to tell you what happens when people can't live. Okay, look overseas at any of the countries on the gold machine gun index. That's what happens when people can't live. You need people riding around in Jeeps with guns to keep people in line and keep them working and keep doing all that stuff. We don't want to get there, but to your point, okay, there's been a lot more sightings, let's say, of tendencies that really belong in the third world, in the first world, in the last year or so. Riots, shoplifting on video,
homeless camps.
Here in Hamilton, there's homeless camps all over the damn place. They're everywhere.
It's every, you know, city has that. It's not, you know, just a Hamilton thing.
It's not. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. And, you know, there's... I'm going to try and be diplomatic here. I admire the level at which some members of municipal, federal, provincial governments are trying to administer supports to these people in a way that makes sense and is consistent and forward-looking. But it's not meant to address tent cities in every major metropolitan area in the country at the same time. That's a symptom of a huge problem. And we're seeing these symptoms more and more and more and more. And, you know, we got to think of a plan here. If you're a policymaker or a lobbyist or whatever, you know, you're looking at these things and thinking this is a bit of an issue, you got to think of a way out. The problem is, it doesn't look like there is one, short of continuing to monetize debt continuing to raise rates into poor financial conditions, continuing to, you know, XYZ, all the things that got you here, except we really got to put the turbo button on now, because if we don't, these conditions are going to get so much worse, so much quicker that there's nothing we can do after that. Austerity starts to kick in and energy costs start to get out of hand. And, you know, you get unrest and disobedience and all these things. This is the reason that I buy Bitcoin. I'm not hoping for the doomsday scenario. And I think I've heard so many times in Twitter spaces over the last little while that Bitcoiners are hoping for the doomsday scenario to prove their thesis. I don't want the doomsday scenario. I would love to use Bitcoin in a similar fashion to how gold is used, you know, as a kind of store of value slash cross currency to the fiat currencies. I don't know if I'll get to use it like that. I don't know if it'll be long-term, you know, new global peg, or if long-term it'll be digital Beanie Babies. I don't know. I can't pretend to know. I think though that the more opportunities we give to governments to try and make things better with the tools they have, the worse they're going to get. And the worse they get, the more you have a need for something outside that system. And this thing fits the bill perfectly, as far as I can tell. And so I would just suggest to people, look around at what you're seeing. Be honest with yourself. Do you think your city is safer than it was 5 years ago? Do you think your financial situation is better than it was 5 years ago? Do you sleep as well, thinking about the numbers in your bank account, your investing account, your mortgage, your interest rates, your credit card payments, as you did 5 years ago? My guess is that the answer is squarely no across the board. And again, we talked about this before. You're going to be told all the time that your irresponsible spending, your COVID behavior, your lack of productivity, your all these things are the cause of your financial woes. There was a time probably when that would have been true, but that time is not right now. The culmination of 50 years of poor policy is here. It's here, man. And COVID might have done it to us, might not have, but the idea that this is the fault of people who are just trying to work to get by, have a couple of beers on a Friday, maybe go on a vacation to an all-inclusive once every year, every 2 years, you know, while they're young and healthy enough to walk, as they dedicate 40 hours of every week to a job that doesn't care about them, it's not their fault. It's the fault of a lot of other people. And we got to start thinking about these things, taking these things very seriously and thinking about whether you want to continue to play in this sandbox or not.
It seems like we're going to be going down some sort of path, or we are. There's going to be some, I don't want to say great reset, but it looks like there's going to be some default, some debt that's going to be wiped off the books.
Like a jubilee of sorts, yeah.
Something. And I just can't, I mean, looking at how everything is playing out, and debt is being piled on much, much faster now than it has at any other time in history. And it's obviously not going to get any better. So what's the course of action they have? Like, what is the only play that they have available to them? It's got to be something like that. I don't think it'll just wipe off all the debt, but something. But if they do that, I can't understand doing that and still having investors have confidence in treasuries and bonds and investing in whenever a country is going to be issuing debt, because who's going to want to do that if they've just recently said, sorry, guys, you're going to get pennies and a dollar from your previous papers that we issued. So I don't know what's going to happen moving forward. It's really scary. And you touched upon this, and I've said it before too. In no particular period of time, like you look at 2 years ago, 5 years ago, every like time you look at it, that we advance, it gets just worse and worse. And the last 2 years has been really, really bad. And nowhere could you say like it's been better. The only thing that you could say potentially is better now than it was a few years ago is maybe the speed of your video game system, your computer, your phone, or whatever. Other than that, everything, I mean, Moore's Law is very much true there. But everything else, it's so much worse. And it's not just in Western nations. Everywhere is feeling the pinch. And it's just, I don't know what's going to happen moving forward. But yeah, this is why I buy Bitcoin.
I guess we'll just keep doing the show twice a week, regardless of how bad things get.
We'll just do it more if we have to, if it gets really bad.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so let's move on. We'll talk about the Clown World North. And the first story I'm going to be talking about is a Canadian bank called Van City. And we almost opened an account there. We tried to, at least. They launched a credit card that is linked to carbon emissions. Oh. And they're going to be offering a credit card that links the purchases to carbon emissions, allowing customers to compare their monthly carbon footprint to the national average. And the bank will also advise customers on how to limit their carbon footprint. Incredible stuff. I think this is going to be something that's more and more prevalent moving forward. Not looking forward to it, but it's unfortunately something we're going to have to deal with. And moving on, we finally have some at least realization from mainstream media. What is the cause, or one of the causes, for this massive inflation we're dealing with? The Globe and Mail published an opinion piece, and it was talking about the most important source of Canada's inflation, which is the government borrowed more than $700 billion in the past little while. Finally, we have somebody that clued in on this. Fiscal and monetary policy, they're related, and they all deal, in the end, we are the net result in terms of feeling the pain from all this. And with respect to pain, we could talk about Health Canada. And they are now importing more kids' pain and fever medication to restock the shelves. We talked about this last week, but still, from what I understand, the shelves are relatively bare. So it's going to take some time before this comes and we see the results of this. And what is being impacted, I see that's being reported, is children's allergy medication, adult cough syrup, and cold syrup. So now it's not just the children's stuff, it's the adult stuff. Eye drops, and even some oral antibiotics. Do you remember not too long ago in the United States when they had the baby formula shortage, and then they had the plane come by, and everybody was high-fiving each other and looking at the people that were offloading it like they were just divine people from the heavens giving us what we need? We're going to get the same thing here. And when they come in with these planes coming in with all this stuff for us, we're going to look at that and say, wow, this is fantastic stuff. We're going to forget the fact how we got here where we didn't have the shelves that are stocked with the vital pieces of medication we need to keep our children alive and keep them well. It's
sad, stuff. Do you remember how much Trump was villainized for that video clip? I think it was after a hurricane, maybe, where he's like taking jump shots with toilet paper into the crowd. Remember how villainized he was for that? At least he never had to bring in a military cargo jet full of baby formula. At least we never got there with that guy as the president. And I'm not saying like he's a great president or anything. You know, he may not even be a guy worth mentioning these days, short of if he doesn't get the nomination. But the fact of the matter is, again, to your point, undoubtedly, this is a worse outcome than the guy, you know, Kobe into a crowd with TP, right? It's definitely worse. I'm not just imagining that. It is worse to do this.
I think so. It would have been better, I think, if he was also doing, instead of toilet paper, it was Big Macs or fries or something like that, because that would have been more akin to Trump. Remember that one time he had all the – he was catering. Who was it that came over for –
It was the CBS College Bowl champions. Clemson, I think, that won the title and came in.
That was just absolutely –
that was fantastic. Anyway, we'll talk about Trump's greatest hits in the after show. But anyway.
Well, you know, Trump, he's associated with real estate. Let's talk about real estate in Canada. The city of Toronto has a vacant home tax, and I had no idea this was the case, but apparently it's based on the honor system, because the city of Toronto, and a quote from their tweet, residential properties unoccupied more than 6 months per year may be subject to Toronto's new vacant home tax. All residential property owners will have to declare the occupancy status of the home. So really, it's on the honor system. If you don't declare this, you're not going to be subjected to the tax. So who the heck's going to want to do this? It doesn't make sense to me. In terms of how important real estate is to Canada and really in the GTA, I did some research. Everybody seems to be a realtor in this neck of the woods. In fact, Toronto real estate, the workers, 1 in 59 people working in Toronto are real estate agents. That's a very, very high.
1 in 15?
59.
Oh, 59.
It's a mass. They're working in selling homes. And man, oh man, I took a look at the stats. The Ontario retail's income, it was averaging last year $125,000 per year, but apparently because of the drop in home prices and less sales, it's going to drop to as low as $80,000 per year. Because a lot of money that's lost in commission, that's $3 billion in total. In fact, that's going to be lost in commission this year. And by the way, the $125,000 they were getting last year on average, that's higher than the average lawyer was clocking in, which was around $95,000 annually. So real estate people, like, man, they were doing, the agents, they were doing really, really well. And Now they're not. Unfortunately, if they keep this up, they're going to have to take advantage of what's going on at food banks. In fact, data from April 2021 to March 2022, they found that food bank visits in Toronto were up 16% year over year. It went up from 1.45 million to 1.68 million. And they say on average, they are also younger and likely to be employed. It makes sense to me. It's the younger people who just don't have the ability to make more money, and they have very, very little to shield themselves from rising costs. And they say just over 80% of the clients who are working, albeit often precariously with low wages and little to no benefits, they're living in deep poverty, which is less than $19,000 a year for a single person. And really, why are they hitting food banks? Makes sense. If you look at the price of food year over year, as of October year over year, dairy is up 10.6%, bakery goods up 5.5%, fruit 16.6%, vegetables 8.9%, lettuce up 30% over the year. It's not just Canada that's feeling the pinch. If you look at worldwide, Canada's kind of in the middle of the pack. Japan is the lowest with 6.2% food inflation year over year, but Sweden is as high as 17.2%. Everybody is feeling the pinch for higher cost of food. Why? Well, I would imagine the price of diesel is much higher. You need diesel to farm the equipment, you need diesel to transport the equipment. Again, you also have people that are needing more money to work in the system. So everything costs more and more money. But remember, they try to capture all this in the CPI, and they said the Canadian CPI stayed steady at 6.9%. So 6.9%, I don't buy it considering what's going up with the cost of food. And I'm pretty sure that the CPI doesn't capture the $200 per Advil capsule, the children's Advil capsule that's going on the black market, because there's no way it was going to be 6.9%. And in the midst of all this, the people that are behind the monetary policy that got us here, the Bank of Canada, they're tweeting now about CPI. They're going on this campaign, and they're saying that they're using the CPI data as a way to target inflation. And it looks like TIFF is now talking tough about inflation and CPI, and that's going to be the shining light to see if they're going to be, if they are doing something well here. It's all reactionary. The CPI is data that's compiled within the last 12 months. If they're using that as saying, look, things are doing well, it's all just old information. It's very much reactionary. And the Bank of Canada, their Twitter account is just a disaster. If you look at how many followers they have 200,000 plus followers. A lot of their tweets don't even get 10 likes. That's an awful ratio. And in fact, if you want to like talk a little bit more about what the Bank of Canada is doing, the curve, the yield curve, it's now inverted to minus 83 basis points. It's just getting worse and worse, and it's not going to get any better. So just buckle up, because it's just going to be very bad. And like I mentioned, it's all reactionary moves, and it's really just, you know, it's causing a lot of issues too with people with mortgages. The trigger point has been reached. A lot of people have been receiving documentation from their mortgage companies, the banks or whoever they have mortgage with, saying, unfortunately, we reached the price, and you know, there you go. So you got to start paying more. This is for people with variable mortgages. And also people on rent. Well, the average rent, you talked about it with Joe Pompliano's information. Well, Canada rent on average is up 12% year over year, and it's almost $2,000. That's nationally. So that even takes into consideration places that are sparsely populated. Man, oh man, it's nuts. And
can I just add something there before you continue?
Yeah,
before,
please.
I forget. Rent at that level guarantees you will not be able to save enough money to buy a home. Once you start, you're stuck. That's it. It's a black hole.
That's $2,000 after tax dollars. So if you're grossing, say, $5,000 a month, okay, you're probably making $3,000 net in a month. I'm just spitballing here. $2,000 gone to rent, while you have $1,000 to play with for everything else. So really, it's tough to get by. And a lot of people now, and they're unfortunately taking to drugs. Toronto Public Health, they issued an alert. There was at least 15 people in the last 2 weeks that they've died of drug overdoses. It looks like people they've had enough. And they're just doing anything they can to alleviate the pain. And I'm not trying to say that they're doing this, they're overdosing themselves. They're just trying to alleviate the pain. And unfortunately, they took too much, and their body wasn't able to deal with it. But this now goes, and that's a sad story. I'm going to end off on this rather funny story. And this is my no coiner of the week. We'll talk about her a little bit later on. But her name is Meg W. And this is an article from, I think it was CP24. And she was talking about what you mentioned earlier, that owning a pet is more and more costly. She's saying, from food and from grooming expenses, it's just getting very, very costly.
Len, wait a minute. So you cannot be about to tell me something worse than a year ago when they said we should just kill our pets, right? That was a year ago. We had that discussion on this show. There was that article that came out and said your pets, you should just kill them if they're too expensive. I can't wait to hear what you come up with here.
It's not going to be that bad because I'm more targeting the person rather than the animals. Okay. Meg W. And she was saying the veterinarian bills are piling up, and they're saying that many Canadians are also feeling the pinch of these fees because everything is getting too expensive. Meg W is 36, and she's grossing $35,000 a year in income because she is a full-time, she's working full-time in marketing and studying part-time to be a psychotherapist. $35,000 a year, this is her gross annually. So net, who the heck knows how much it is. She had some surgeries that had to be performed on her dogs. $12,000 she had to pay for this. Having a dog is a luxury. I'm sorry to say. I mean, I know people, they have to have a pet. Get a goldfish. If you can't afford it, you shouldn't have one. $35,000 a year isn't going to cut it, because if anything is going to happen with your dog, if you don't have the insurance, and it looks like this person didn't have pet insurance, anytime you have to go to the vet, it's going to be very costly. Do you have the money to spend to pay for the vet bills? $12,000. I'm going to say she spent more than half of her net income just simply on two surgeries. How is she making ends meet? I have no fucking clue. But it's people like this that unfortunately they're going to be handed out money left and right because they want to get more and more, and we're going to be holding the bags. Again, just keep buying Bitcoin, because this shit makes me so fucking bullish on Bitcoin. I have no idea what else to say.
If my dog ever needed surgery at that price level, my path would go one of two ways. If he was in good enough health, I would strap a mask on him. I'd strap a mask on myself and we'd go rob a bank together for sure. I would do that for my dog. But the other alternative, like, you know, I don't know. Knock on wood, I hope I never have to make that decision. But at 30,000 or whatever that cost is, or 12,000, you said, I love my dog. Scoop's a great dog. It's been nothing but a good time for me. I would give him a great week of fun, excitement, and stakes, and then send him over the Rainbow Bridge. That's the way it is. That's the way it is. My wife may disagree. My in-laws may disagree. Even my father may disagree, who, you know, didn't like dogs till I got him. But 12K is a lot, man. And, you know, if your dog could talk, he'd tell you were an idiot too. So, you know, that aside, the article you mentioned there about the Bank of Canada doing the borrowing to the tune of $700 billion, that was one notable article this week that came out. The other notable article, though, was the one from, I believe, a resident physician at some university hospital. I can't remember if it must have been Ontario. I don't remember exactly where. Suggesting that the entire Canadian healthcare system needs an overhaul, because he's basically tired of seeing it's COVID, it's RSV or whatever these kids are getting from being in school for the first time in a million years. It's not anything to do with contact tracing and other nonsense. It's that this system is underfunded. It's been broken. We're bringing too many people into the country. There's too many people relying on this, not enough money going into it, and it needs to change. And, you know, among the recommendations he makes, it's a great article. You should read it, by the way. I think I tweeted it out maybe Saturday or Friday. Among the recommendations he makes, talk about burning the establishment home. If the government can't ensure that you get the proper treatment inside of a reasonable waiting period, they should pay for your treatment outside the country, full stop, including travel, including accommodations, everything paid for by OHIP if they can't do it here in a reasonable amount of time. And that reasonable amount of time should be set by a board separate from the Ontario health insurance plan. So there's a lot of people who are looking at the root causes of issues now related to inflation, related to healthcare, related to poor education outcomes, related to a number of things. And the mask is really coming off, no pun intended, in a number of different ways and in a number of different disciplinary silos. I'm happy to see this from a guy who certainly has benefited from the system treating him well. I'm happy to see that he's looking to make a contribution that's outside of the status quo. Good for him. The drug overdose thing you mentioned. So I have a little bit of insight into this. The reason that you see overdoses go up during times of economic hardship, two reasons. One, people turn to substances, of course. during these times, alcohol and drugs included. That's a cause because people who are, you know, maybe inexperienced with drugs start taking them and you run into problems. But the other less talked about issue is that if you and me were buying drugs, okay, let's say you and me are, we like to use MDMA, we'll say. If you go to buy MDMA somewhere and you get it in a powder, you know, you may pay $30, let's say, for X amount of MDMA. I have no idea how much MDMA costs. MDMA, probably not even a good example because it doesn't make a lot of sense with the cut, but whatever. Let's say you buy MDMA, they give it to you in a powder, it costs $30. The next time you go buy MDMA or you want to, you can't buy it for $30 because you don't have 30 bucks this time. You got to find someone who will sell it to you for 20. The places or the people who will sell you that drug for a significantly less amount, a significantly smaller amount, don't take care to do things like clean the surface on which they cut the drugs, clean the surface which they use to separate the drugs. And so what you wind up getting is people using the same same tools and the same surfaces they use for something like fentanyl, which will kill you in super small doses. And so you get these contaminants in drugs that don't normally, you know, have the contaminants in them when you buy them at a, you know, from a premium dealer, let's say. And these things compound over time and people say, oh, there's a huge drug problem in the city. Not really. That's not quite the case. The problem is that people don't have money to go to places they know are safe when it comes to deciding what things to put in their body. That's a different problem with a different cause and a different solution than it is, you know, a problem with more abusers. It's not always the case. And so those two things are important. As far as like some of the other stuff you mentioned there, you know, this idea that like things are things are kind of falling apart here for a lot of the established narrative. Do you feel like it is, or do you feel like that's, you know, what we see and not what the average Canadian sees?
That was just a one-off. It was an opinion piece from the Global Mail. I don't think the people that write articles on a daily basis are seeing it and writing about what we see. So this is simply just a one-off. But it's good to see that there's an alternate viewpoint that's being written and posted on that particular chain. But sorry, that particular newspaper, because typically they don't do it.
I am split on this because my sort of data points are my immediate family. I have a pretty left-leaning family, a pretty, you know, supportive of left-leaning politicians. I've heard more than once from people in my family that they're a fan of the way Biden handled Ukraine, handled inflation, handled all this stuff. Same thing with Justin Trudeau. Whether I agree or not, it doesn't really matter. I'm just, you know, painting a picture here of the kind of people that I'm around from time to time. And in the last month or so, I've heard those viewpoints really eroding. People don't understand why the bank is raising rates this quickly, for example. Why isn't the government doing anything to stop this? People don't understand why the carbon tax hasn't been lifted or halted or paused in the face of all these other problems. People don't understand why Joe Biden is still giving a bunch of money to Ukraine every 2 weeks while people in America can't afford to fill their car, eat, go to school. People are upset about the student loan forgiveness program in the States. It was promised and then not delivered, you know, poorly researched at the very least, right? So I think a lot of people are starting to come to this conclusion, you know, to kind of tie this back into what we were saying in the first story. How do we make all this stuff into an opportunity for Bitcoin? How do we say to people, you see the problem, you see that this is not a sustainable set of policies, you see this is not a sustainable economic environment. We can't be up only forever. There's going to be pain. And when the pain eventually is allowed to arrive, it's going to sting. How do we account for that? Well, I think that's where we can start, you know, describing the Bitcoin fit. Here's this thing that forces power procurement strategies, forces miners to go dig for fixed energy costs, low energy costs, forces green power where it's the most efficient, most inexpensive, and has a finite supply outside the realm of political whims and the tyranny of the majority, which we are subject to at the moment. The more people realize that on a long enough time horizon, people in democratic societies realize they can just vote themselves all kinds of free shit, the closer we get to people realizing the utility of Bitcoin. And again, like, we really got to push adoption. I'm trying my best. I know you're trying your best. And stories like these, man, where major news outlets are publishing this stuff, outlets that, by the way, take subsidy from the federal government at the moment as part of the COVID relief plan, I believe, among other things, including the Canadian media support that's been given out in the past. We've talked about that too. All that money coming in, still they're printing this stuff. It's a really good sign. I agree with you.
Think about this, though. This is another viewpoint to look at. The United States had an election just 2 weeks ago, and we all thought that it would have been a sweep by the Red Party, and it wasn't. It was much closer. And in fact, didn't the Democrats retain the Senate through the election? So it was, I guess, a minor upset. Still, there's, based off that, and I know it's not popular vote, it's the way it's set up over there, it's the electoral college system, but still there's a large number of people that are happy, or at least happy enough with the system that they're going to vote for the same party in. So that's kind of sad in a way, given what's transpired in the past 2 years. Why haven't people decided to say, we had enough of this, let's see what the other guys have to do? But whatever, it is what it is.
They'll vote for free stuff. Like, that's,
they sure will.
We've talked about this a million times. I don't want to rehash it, but be aware that demographics will become your destiny at the ballot box, 100%. If people need free shit and one party's giving it away, they're going to have to keep giving it away to keep winning, and it's going to make the problem worse and worse. That's the fact of the matter.
The last Canadian story I have, and it's, I want to thank Bitcoin Gandalf for giving us this information, CoinSquare, which is a Canadian exchange. And they got more into the shitcoin market last year when they started listing a little bit more than what they used to list. So, well, it looks like they're suffering some hardship over there, because this is a tweet that came out from them. It says, we are experiencing an operational issue impacting crypto withdrawals and are actively working for a solution. In the meantime, crypto withdrawals are being processed but are delayed. The Canadian dollar deposits and withdrawals are working normally. So it looks like, given the environment that other exchanges and other companies that can't give the money to users' funds to people are wondering if something is going on at CoinSquare. I'm not saying it is. It just seems kind of interesting that this is happening at a time when you see Genesis, you see Gemini, you see FTX, and a whole bunch of others also have the same problem. And, well, what happened to them? Insolvency, liquidity issues. I don't know. CoinSquare, I hope them the best. I hope that they don't lose people's money. But if you are one of their users, you may want to be a little concerned.
A little concerned? I would say you got to be very concerned. If you're one of these, if you're using an exchange that had to pause or had difficulties with withdrawals and blamed like this stuff about crypto cash outs not working, the exchange only has one job. It's to put the transactions on chain. It's the crypto cash outs, almost regardless of token, always work. They're always on. That's the whole point. So this idea that the crypto cash outs, they're delayed, they're not working, it's fucking horseshit. It's horseshit. They don't have what they say they got. That is the fact of the matter. Short of these severe technical issue affecting every single bit of their withdrawal process, I'd be freaking out, man, for sure. Anyway, let's not get into it, but just be aware, be cautious, you know, be defensive. This is the time.
Yeah, don't leave anything on there. Let's move on. I got a few stories I want to wrap up before we go to the Bitcoin or NoCoiner of the week. And we have, well, Bukele has come out. I'm not sure if you saw this one, but he said he's going to be buying one Bitcoin every day starting, well, tomorrow. This happened a few days ago. So one Bitcoin a day, El Salvador is going to be buying up. I took a look to see how much they have on the reserves. They bought to date, at least before this tweet came out, 2,381 Bitcoin. And the average price they bought in was 43,357. So this is going to very slowly reduce their average buy cost to buy in, because if they're buying only one a day, it's going to take a long time before it's very much noticeable. But still, it's funny. One a day, it's an interesting number. Where they're getting this money, I don't know. I mean, it's obviously debt they're using to buy this. Let's hope it works out for them, because if not, the poor people of El Salvador, it's going to be tough.
I have mixed feelings on El Salvador. I don't want to spoil my Bitcoin of the week, though, so I'm not going to get into it.
Okay. And the last story, actually, the second last story I have is Block. They're going to be manufacturing their own Bitcoin hardware wallet, and this is going to be in Texas. And we haven't heard very much of this for several months. It's been kind of flying under the radar. I guess now that Jack Dorsey is no longer affiliated with Twitter, he can now put more time and effort towards other things like Block. Questions I have. Is this going to be something that's open source? Is it going to be something that's going to be the beneficiary of the CHIP Act, the CHIPS Act? That, from what I understand, that's for semiconductor research. Does that also apply to this particular Bitcoin wallet? I have no idea. I took a look at their website, and well, there's a lot of job openings. They actually have some jobs that are including software engineer for Lightning for Bitcoin wallet. So if you are somebody that's looking for a job that's in the Bitcoin sphere, that have a lot of technical knowledge, including Lightning, there's several job openings that are going to be opening up a Block. But yeah, check it out. Apparently very well paid. It's 150 plus US dollars each job from what I see there. So, but I still have some questions, because it's just been, we haven't heard very much about this. How is this going to be competing against other more established seed signers? I don't know. I'm kind of skeptical about this, but having it done in Texas, I guess that's a win.
Yeah. Listen, Dorsey has yet to, you know, prove to be anything but an asset to Bitcoin. So I have high hopes for this. I think the fact that it sounds like it's going to have Lightning integration baked in from day one is fantastic. What's not to like? Let's see what he can do. Also, like, Dorsey working on Lightning is Twitter working on Lightning, in my view. I think him and Elon, as evidenced by those tweets or whatever, or the text messages, I should say, shared as part of the acquisition, I think those guys talk on a regular basis. And I think he trusts Elon trusts Dorsey. And so I think if those guys are working on Lightning stuff over at Block, I view that as a symbiotic relationship with Twitter. I'm very hopeful that that they'll come up with something together and make Lightning payments on Twitter a reality.
He is still a minor owner.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah.
See, he didn't sell his ownership, his stake in Twitter, which, I mean, is the grand scheme of things is quite a bit in dollars, but it's just Elon's just dwarfs his in terms of ownership of the company. But that's a topic for another time. The last story I want to talk about is we passed a milestone. 2017. November 17th, 2017, to be specific, there was the fork of Bitcoin known as SegWit2x, and that didn't proceed as planned because there was a bug in the SegWit2x software, and it caused the client to stop at block 400,900, whatever. It's just a very, very high number. But that was a big thing. That anybody that was on it is they were experiencing some issues, and that was before... slightly before we got in, at least me. I think I got in around there, but I wasn't aware of this stuff. So yeah, there you go. It's some cool stuff. We passed a milestone. Goodbye to SegWit2x, and we will probably never hear of again until next year when we talk about it.
That was only 5 years ago, and it seems like it was a lifetime, an eternity ago, because of all the stuff that's happened since then. The asset has come so far, and the network has come so far that you and me can just talk about the SegWit2x debacle in a 30-second hit during the show, at the end of the show. And it's okay. It really speaks to the development of the asset class. Very exciting stuff.
Yeah, the New York agreement and all that jazz, it's water under the bridge. It was a big thing at the time, the block size war and all that. But that's just ancient history, this particular moment. And that's it. We can move on to the Bitcoiner and NoCoiner section of the show. And that's brought to you, to everybody, by Tahini's. You have to... graphic. There you go.
I'm always working on the graphic. You just keep doing your thing and I'll get that graphic up, buddy. No worries.
Thank you. Yeah. So they opened up another store, from what I understand, in Guelph. Am I wrong? So they're opening stores, looks like, all the time. It's a bear market, but stores are popping up all over the place. And I think it's primarily just Southern Ontario. That people are asking, when is it going to be in other provinces or other countries? People are just waiting for it. It's good food. You'll like it. Great Bitcoiner. Check it out if you're within driving distance. But yeah, I'll be really quick, because I talked about my NoCoiner of the week, and it's Meg the dog the dog owning individual that just is working just to pay for
Wait a minute, did she
surgery.
Say she owned a dog? Oh, she did. I was going to say she sounds more like a cat lady to me, but
No, she's a dog. So it was a $12,000 for two dogs. She has two dogs, in fact, and she's earning $35,000 a year, and she had to spend $12,000 on surgery for one of them. It's a sad story, but come on, prioritize. If you don't have the money for driving a Ferrari, don't own a Ferrari. Just own a little dicky car of a Ferrari. That's what you got to do. And the same thing with this. If you can't afford a dog or two dogs, get rid of them. Get a goldfish. You'll be good to go. But that's my no quinter of the week.
The only bag you want to be left holding is one with the fish in it from the carnival. That's it. Otherwise, you're in big trouble. My Bitcoiner of the week, which is all I have, is a friend of the show, Jaime Garcia, who took on Alex Gladstein in a debate about the merits of the El Salvador, you know, sitting president's policy, constitutional reforms, continued election. And Jaime is an El Salvadorian. He's a Salvadorian native and moved here. And, you know, he's a boots on the ground guy. He's been on the show a bunch to kind of debunk and give color to some of the stuff you see on Bitcoin Twitter with regards to Bukele in the country. And listen, I don't know enough about El Salvador to say one way or the other whether everything Jaime says is accurate. I have no reason to think it's not. I think the man is quite honest, and you know, we like him quite a bit. I don't want to speak for you, Len, but I imagine you like him as well. And listening to that debate, which I still have to finish, it is clear listening to him speak about El Salvador, especially to Gladstein, that he takes great pleasure in describing the situation in the way he views is accurate and in the way that he is living in Gladstein's head rent-free. The number of times Gladstein is quick to jump or raise his voice or sound irritated during the first half hour of that debate, first 20 minutes of that debate, really is good. And, you know, the HRF has some place in the Bitcoin world. I don't know exactly what it is, but I know that Jaime has been a good Bitcoiner for as long as we've known him. So I'm giving it to Jaime, Bitcoiner of the Week this week on the CBP.
How old was that debate? Because I recall there was one maybe a month and a half ago. Is that the one that you're listening to? Or is
I think so.
Recent?
The Bitcoin Magazine one. I didn't even know about it. But it's great. It's so good.
So I offered up the floor over here to those two individuals if they want to come on and hash it out on our show. But one said yes. The other one said no. I don't want to say who's the yes, who said no. Actually, Jaime said yes. There you go.
I wonder.
But Jaime is... he's really good. He's very articulate and he knows his stuff because not only has he lived it, but he actually read the Constitution and the, so he's been through these documents. He's read through them.
He said him and his grandfather or him and his father, like make a night of it once in a while. Right. I'm pretty sure he said that on this air that they do it like on a weekend once in a while, they'll look through something to see if, you know, to compare and contrast between the Constitution and what's going on over there and see the legality and stuff.
So in the end, it's really just a set of opinions, and it's hard to say who's correct because there's no real right or wrong here. So I'm not going to say that Gladstein or Gladstein, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. I heard both pronunciations for his name, and I don't want to say Jaime is right or wrong, but it's really just a matter of perception and which one you believe is correct. But I like the fact that they're both talking and you're bringing points of their own, you know, own side, and they're hashing it out like that in a public forum. That's awesome to see. I just hope that in the end that there's no animosity, because you don't want that. You want them at least to walk away at least on friendly terms, and then they could do this again later on and advance the cause, I guess, the discussion on El Salvador.
Yeah, it's exciting, man, to have – listen, Bitcoin is a lot of things, but it's a place for debate, I think, more than most others. And it's good that – people who disagree with each other are embracing debate on a number of different levels. That's all I want. And that's how good ideas rise to the surface, period. That's how the right things, the truth rises to the surface is through these, you know, these old fashioned means of discussing, debating, and trying to tear down each other's points instead of each other's character. It's good to see.
We need more yelling. That's what we need. Just need to have people pissed off. Anyways, that's it for this show, Joey. The price of Bitcoin, I have it ready.
Hit it. Hit me with it.
$21,000, 237 in Canadian dollars.
My phone widget, my lock screen widget tells me it's 15,872 US. So closing in on 16 again. Great. Bullish.
Five years ago, it would have been freaking well. I guess 5 years ago was like, wow.
2020 would have been great. No, never mind. It would have been fine. But yeah. I don't know. Let's see. I'm happy to keep buying, man. No big deal. DCA just chugging along.
Yeah, if Bukele is doing it, why not us?
Yeah,
he's buying one whole Bitcoin a day.
Well, because it's not his money, it's my money. So
no, it's not even yours. It's his citizens' money. The citizens which he represents. Sorry, that's the better way to. Yeah,
sure, sure.
Well, he's an elected official for them, right? He doesn't own them; they don't own him. He's just elected and representing them.
Maybe one thing we should say: we have an interview Wednesday with I have no idea who. You look it up. Will I give a little bit of
Dean's?
I don't know. Current. You look it up. I want to talk about Joe Hall's interview last week that we tried to do and didn't do. Joe reached out to us and apologized for his absence. And I think he had a good reason to not do the show. You may or may not know what that reason was. You could probably discern for yourself what that reason was. And I am hopeful we'll have Joe on the program in the new year. We do want to have him on. I think he does good work for Bitcoin. But that day just wasn't his day. And I'm not going to hold that against him. Len's not going to hold that against him. And you guys shouldn't either. I know a number of you reached out and asked if we got, you know, rug pulled by Joe. I don't blame the guy. Everyone has had days like that. And if he didn't want to talk to us, that's, you know, his prerogative and his decision. And it'll be a better interview next time because of it. So anyway, who we got Wednesday? Who's the guy?
Dean Skorka. He is the interim CEO of WonderFi and also the president of BitBuy. And it's a good time to talk to him, given what's transpired in the past couple of weeks with FTX and a whole other bunch of companies. But I also want to talk to him because BitBuy is going to be introducing in the new year, I believe in January, a new product to their users. And it's going to be one that is, I think, taking aim at Wealthsimple. They're going to be offering up the ability to buy stocks and ETFs. So you can buy shares in the company like Apple or whatever, but it only applies for US listed companies. So if it's on the New York Stock Exchange, the NASDAQ, you name it. And what's interesting about that, it's going to be commission-free. It's going to have before and after trading hours that you could take advantage of the trades.
That's big. That's
that is massive.
Yeah.
So I want to talk to him more about this. It looks to me they're taking site of Wealthsimple and they're offering a product that is in competition to them, not in totality, but they're offering services that Wealthsimple doesn't offer. Really cool. I can't wait to talk to him about that, but also what's going on in the overall digital asset market.
Lots to talk about with him. God bless you, everyone. Thank you for your continued support. I tweet this sometimes. We almost just blew out our number one month last month. We didn't quite get there, so that was our second last month ever. But as the price is in the tank, man. And for the amount of people that listen to this show, even with the price in the tank, like I couldn't be happier. It's flattering. It's humbling. It's all that stuff. So thank you. Good night. God bless you. Stay for the after show. Come to the YouTube after show if you're on audio only. And we'll see you Wednesday.
Yeah, take care.